In Acts chapter 17, where John just read for us, and the theme of this lesson is going to be taught of God. We are taught of God, not taught of men, not taught of the great philosophers, not taught of the great minds of our time or of any time, the minds that are so great that they've persisted over a century and indeed over millennia. But we are taught of God. We don't rely on men. We don't look to men, but we look to God. And I find it interesting that, as John was reading there, that you think about the world entire, and the world is in darkness. It has been in darkness for a very long time. And how can you disabuse yourself of that darkness? What method can you use? Well, you need to find some light. The question is, who do you use as your light? Who is the true light? Who is the light that will show you what actually you ought to be doing? What actually gives life meaning? What actually is your design? What actually is your purpose? And all kinds of different people will have all kinds of different answers. One of the most thought about questions is, what is the meaning of life? Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever heard anybody ask that? And normally, you know, you hear kids ask about that, and they'll say, well, nobody can know. Nobody can know. And that seems like, you know, that's a humble answer, you know, nobody can know. That is beyond us. We have to recognize we're in such a thick mist of darkness, we can't answer such a question. It would be too daring to posit an answer to that. And you know, in most circumstances, that would be true. The only instance in which that would not be true is if something or someone supernaturally guided us. And that's what we're going to be looking at tonight. And in verse 27 there, or in verse 26 actually, and he made from one every man, every nation of mankind to live on the face of all of the earth. Now think about the setting of this. It's Paul by himself, by his lonesome, except God is with him, of course. But he's by his lonesome, standing in the Areopagus, Mars Hill, surrounded by great minds of his time, and he's giving this defense of the gospel. And he says something that would be altogether controversial for everyone there. That it's not that our God made us and their God made them, or we got here somehow, some way, and gods are now over us, and this God's over wine, this God's over war, this God's over that, and only in this region, in that region, there are other gods. No, there's one God who made all people through all time, and he is over all. Okay? Controversial. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, not limited by geography. Having determined their appointed times, not limited by time either, and the boundaries of their habitation. Now, why did he do this? Why did he set things? Have you ever wondered why things are set up the way they're set up? And you say, well, it's just time and chance. No, there's a purpose. What's the purpose? That they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. Things are set up the way they're set up. Kids ask, what is the purpose of life? For what reason? That they may seek. They're in the darkness, but they're groping for the light. They're feeling for the light. They're trying to grasp onto something solid, to something that is not darkness, something that is light, something that can show them what they ought to be doing with their life, because God has set eternity in the heart of man. Why did he do that? So that we would seek and that we would find. Okay? Verse 27, that they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. He can be found. You say, nobody can find the answer to that. No, he can be found. He set you there so that you may seek, and if you seek, you will find. He's not far, for in him. Now notice this, the whole world's in darkness. Notice what their own prophets say. These pagan prophets, in the darkness, for in him we live and move and exist, as even some of your own poets have said, for we also are his children. They've come to the same conclusion. In the darkness, though they may be, but they've wrestled with this question. And why is that? Because God's put it in their heart. They know it's a very important question. Let's spend all of our resources trying to find the answer. And guess what? Though you grope in the darkness, God's not far. You've come to a right conclusion. Now, I'm asking you, Paul, I'm asking you to take the next step. This Jesus Christ, he's the one you're looking for. He's the way you're looking for. Yes, you've come to some good conclusions. You've got to take the next step, though. Being then the children of God, we not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, an image formed by the art and thought of man. Therefore, having overlooked the time of ignorance, I can't blame you. You did not receive the commandments. You did not receive the law as the Jews did. You were left in darkness. But that time has come to an end. Therefore, having overlooked the time of ignorance, God is now declaring to men that all people everywhere should repent. You should change. What was once overlooked is no longer overlooked. You now have the light. Now it's not a matter of you not having light. It's a matter of, do you reject the light or do you accept the light? Okay. What's the next verse say there? Why? Why should I listen to you, Paul? Because he has fixed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness. This light is going to divide. The light will divide the light from the darkness. Judge the world in righteousness through a man whom he has appointed, having furnished proof. Well, Paul, listen, we get a lot of people coming through here, a lot of people expressing their ideas, a lot of people saying this, a lot of people saying that, a lot of people contradicting each other. Why should we, and quite frankly, you're not the most dazzling speaker, Paul, why should we listen to you? You don't have the greatest resume. In fact, you're an ex-convict. Why should we listen to you? What's it say? Having furnished proof to all men by raising him from the dead. Do you accept that? Now, of course, they had eyewitnesses at that point. They had, in 1 Corinthians, Paul says, he appeared to 500, most of which are still remaining. Why does he say that? Go ask them. Go ask them. We rely on the testimony of witnesses. But tonight we're talking about taught of God, and you know, you think about that, and it's such a wide subject that we could come at this from so many angles. We could talk about in Hebrews how when you are disciplined, you're being taught of God. In fact, Jesus, it says, he learned obedience through the things which he suffered. And in fact, this morning, before the Lord's Supper, I read from Romans 5, and it talked about going through trials, and you learn perseverance, and you learn character, you build, you add to your skills, you're refined. You're being taught by God through the things that you go through. But I'm not really going to talk about that aspect tonight. I'm going to talk about really the light that God has provided through the Bible. And the first passage I want to look at is in Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12. Starting in verse 38. Matthew chapter 12, starting in verse 38. Matthew 12, starting in verse 38. Then some of the scribes and Pharisees said to him, talking to Jesus, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you." But he answered and said to them, "An evil and adulterous generation craves for a sign, and yet no sign will be given to it but the sign of Jonah the prophet. For just as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the sea monster, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth." You want a sign? Well, you know, it's not that I haven't performed any signs. It's not that Jesus didn't perform any signs. He performed a multitude of signs. But he says there's one sign that's going to reign above all others. And what's that going to be? It's going to be the sign of Jonah. What was the sign of Jonah? Just as Jonah went to his death, as it were, in the belly of the sea monster for 3 days, but then was resurrected, as it were, to preach to these pagans in darkness, so too will the Son of Man die for 3 days and be resurrected, and the word will be preached. That will be the sign. The resurrection. What? In fact, how did Paul end his talk at Mars Hill? Let me tell you, there's a day that God has appointed where you will be judged by the man, Jesus Christ, whom he resurrected. The sign of Jonah. Okay. Verse 41, the men of Nineveh, Nineveh of Babylon, this pagan city whom Jonah was sent to, these pagans that don't have the law, that never even heard of Moses, the men of Nineveh will stand up with this generation that thinks it's just, this generation that thinks it has so much more knowledge than anybody else, this generation who thinks, well, if we would have been alive in the days of our fathers, we wouldn't have killed the prophets like our fathers did. The men of Nineveh, these savages, will stand up with this generation at the judgment and will condemn it. Why is that? Because they repented at the preaching of Jonah. What's the parallel here? What's the parallel? So you have these men who have never heard anything concerning God, yet when Jonah, who is lesser than Jesus, came and preached, they repented. You have the law. You have the advantages. And yet when Jesus, who is the greatest of all, comes to preach, you say, no, we don't want any of that. We're going to reject that. So guess what? On the day of judgment, those men are going to condemn you. Now you would think you would be condemning them. You're a faithful Jew. You're the Pharisees. The most, at least superficially, the most righteous people to walk the face of the earth. The creme de la creme of religiosity. But guess what? These pagans are going to be condemning you, and rightfully so, because they were able to repent at the preaching of a lesser. Okay? What's this next verse? 42. The queen of the south. Now, who's the queen of the south? Do you remember that story? We're going to look at that story in a few moments. It's in 1 Kings 10. We're going to look at that. Let's read the rest of this verse first, though. The queen of the south will rise up with this generation at the judgment and will condemn it. Again, who's the queen of the south? Is she from Jerusalem? Is she from Israel? No, she's a pagan. A pagan. She's someone who is in utter darkness. But she's going to rise up and she's going to condemn you. You who say, you remember the end of John chapter 9? Jesus heals the blind man there. And then he says, you know what these Pharisees' problem is? They think they see. They think they see. They think they have light. Therefore, they're not going to come to the light because they say, I have no need of it. It's like if you thought it was daytime and I said, you want this flashlight? No, it's daytime. But you can't see that you're blind, that you're poor, that you're miserable. You can't see your true situation. You think you have light, but you don't. The queen of the south knew she was in darkness, and she wanted to come and test. She heard of Solomon. She said, you know what? That sounds a little too fantastic to believe. I'm going to go, and I'm going to test. Come and see. The queen of the south will rise up with this generation at the judgment and will condemn it because she came from the ends of the earth. I've come to you and you reject me. She came from the ends of, this pagan came from the ends of the earth to someone who's lesser than me. Is she not going to condemn you? And rightfully so. To hear the wisdom of Solomon, and behold, what's the point? Something greater than Solomon is here. You're rejecting the greater, not the lesser. Let's turn over to 1 Kings chapter 10. It's an incredible story. 1 Kings chapter 10. I'm going to start in verse 1. 1 Kings chapter 10, starting in verse 1. Now when the queen of Sheba, the queen of the south, heard about the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to test him with difficult questions. Hold on, is that a problem? No, that's not a problem at all. You want to verify. You should not be sat there right now saying, I'm going to accept everything that comes out of Matthew's mouth. Absolutely not. You should be extremely skeptical of everyone. Is it actually true? Do you actually care if it's true? Well, you should test it. Is it true? The question is, what do you test it with? That's what we're going to come to. So no problem up to this point. In fact, much credit to her. She came to test him with difficult questions. You know how you hear things and you say, I don't know about that. That sounds a little too fantastic. That sounds a little out there. I don't know. They say this guy can answer any question. They say he can... There's nothing that is beyond him. They say he has supernatural ability. I don't know. We're going to go find out, though. So she came to Jerusalem with a very large retinue, unusual word there, with camels carrying spices and very much gold and precious stones. When she came to Solomon, she spoke with him about all that was in her heart. So I come to you. I've got an opportunity to speak with someone who's extremely wise, who's supernaturally wise. What am I going to ask you? Well, I'm going to take advantage. I'm going to ask you every single question I have, and I'm going to take advantage of the knowledge that is being provided to me. Again, something that should be taken as an example to all of us. Solomon answered all her questions. Nothing was hidden from the king which he did not explain to her. Is it true what they say? Every question I have, every deep mystery that I'm wondering about, I'm going to propose to this guy, and guess what? He was able to answer them all. When the queen of Sheba perceived all the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built, the food of his table, the seating of his servants, the attendance of his waiters and their attire, his cupbearers and his stairways by which he went up to the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. She's in awe. She is in awe. She doesn't know, how could this be true? How could it be true? This sounded like a fairy tale. This sounded like there was no possible way it could be true. It's like when somebody talks about their kids, you know, it may be directionally true, but they're going to go a little overboard. That's what she thought. She thought, you know, maybe he's a smart guy, but he can't be like they say. It can't. That's just supernatural. That's not human. Well, in fact, it was supernatural. Verse 6, then she said to the king, what'd she say? It was a true report which I heard in my own land about your words and your wisdom. Nevertheless, I, and we could add being a responsible human, not being gullible. Nevertheless, I did not believe the reports until I came and my eyes had seen it. Now listen to this. And behold, the half was not told me. I came with the expectation of what? Of being disappointed. But it turns out that I had not heard the half of it. And I'm in awe of what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing. How can this be reality? And behold, the half was not told to me. You exceed in wisdom and prosperity the reports which I heard. How blessed. Now listen to this, verse 8. How blessed are your men. How blessed are those, your servants, who stand before you continually and hear your wisdom. Why are they blessed? You know, sounds like just a job. You're a door attendant. You're a waiter. That doesn't sound like a great job. They're blessed to be in your presence. They're blessed to hear your wisdom. They're blessed to have your light illuminating them. They have any difficult questions? Do people come up with difficult questions? Of course. Guess what? You have a source of wisdom that is always at your side that you can ask. How blessed are they? How blessed are your men? How blessed are those, your servants, who stand before you continually and hear your wisdom? Blessed be the Lord. Now, who is the ultimate one who gets the blessing here? Blessed be the Lord your God, who delights in you to set you on the throne of Israel, because the Lord loved Israel forever. Therefore, he made you king to do justice and righteousness. She gave the king 120 talents of gold and very great amounts of spices and precious stones. Never again did such abundance of spices come in as that which the queen of Sheba, the queen of the south, gave King Solomon. Okay. How blessed are your people, even your servants, because they have your illumination, your radiant glow showing them the way. And, you know, then we come to modern day. And you say, well, you know, you might be sitting there right now listening to this sermon and say, well, Matthew, you're far throw away from King Solomon. And that's absolutely true. And in fact, let's go over to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. First Corinthians chapter 1, starting in verse 18. And you say, well, yeah, we would be blessed to be in the presence of Solomon for all the faults that he did have. We'd be blessed to be in Moses' presence, in Abraham's presence, in David's presence, in Elijah's presence, in Elisha's presence, but you know, here we are, these jars of clay storing this eternal treasure, but the jar's awfully weak. Matthew, you're not quite as impressive as Solomon. I grant you that. That is absolutely true. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 18. For the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the cleverness of the clever I will set aside. Where is the wise man? And you're not supposed to say, hey, I'm over here. You're looking at him. You're blessed to be in my presence. Everyone who's here, when you go home, you just know how blessed you were to listen to my wisdom. No. Where's the wise man? Where's the scribe? Where's the debater of this age? Well, they're on Mars Hill. They're in the Areopagus. Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not come to know God, they're groping. He's not far away. But, ooh, that wisdom is tricky. It tends to lead you away. And there are all kinds of reasons for that. I'm not going to pretend to know all the reasons. I'm not God. But whatever it is, it's going to lead you sideways a lot of times. Through the wisdom did not come to know God. God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. The foolishness of the message. Believe in this Jesus of Nazarene who was crucified. That's the message. He was crucified and he was resurrected. Believe in him. Follow him. They say, ridiculous. For indeed, Jews asked for signs. What did we read in Matthew chapter 12? Jews asked for signs and Greeks searched for wisdom. Paul, you're going to have to get a little more eloquent. This isn't doing it for us. You need to bring in a speech coach or something. You need to go back to school. I don't know. It's not cutting it. But we preach Christ crucified, to Jews a stumbling block and to Gentiles foolishness. But to those who are called, and you know, we could do a whole lesson on that. But to those who are called, we could look at Matthew or John chapter 5 and John chapter 8. And I thought about doing it, but we'd be here for hours here. So we're just going to keep going. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For consider your calling, brethren, that there were not many wise according to the flesh. And you think about that, and it seems to be true. The people that are the most wise according to the flesh, the people that are usually the most intelligent, reject. They say, no, we reject. Why is that? For consider your calling. Look around. Consider your calling. That there were not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong. Does that have any parallel with Matthew 12? God chose the weak things to shame the strong. God chose these pagans to shame the Pharisees. How interesting. How interesting that is. Verse 28, and the base things of the world and the despised, God has chosen the things that are not, so that he may nullify the things that are, so that no man may boast before God. Don't lift yourself up before God. Don't be prideful before God. But by his doing, you are in Christ Jesus, who became to us wisdom from God and righteousness and sanctification and redemption, so that, just as it is written, let him who boasts, boast in the Lord. Well, I'm going to boast in my eloquence. I'm going to boast in my deep understanding. I'm going to boast in my ability to persuade. No, and you know, it's good to have all those things. Those are good tools. Absolutely, but I'm not going to boast in them. Absolutely not. What is the power of salvation? Well, it's the gospel. Well, now, what does that mean? Does that mean I can come up here unprepared, you know, kind of mumble some stuff, spend too long on one point, not spend enough time on another point? Not really. You walk away saying, what was that guy talking about? And then... I said, well, you must just not love God if you didn't understand. I don't know. No, I have some responsibility as a part-time preacher to present the message in a good way. In a way, in fact, what is the responsibility of a teacher / preacher? You think about that. It said that the scribes of Jesus' day, one of the reasons they were so surprised by Jesus is you remember where it says, he speaks as if he has authority. This would be an outrage to them. You don't do that. Why is that? Because you don't have authority. If you're a scribe, they say that some scribes are, some doctors, some scribes would boast about, I never added anything. I never had a teaching that was my own. And you think about that. That's actually a pretty good boast there. I never added anything. Why? Because I'm not adding to or taking away. I'm not revealing. I'm just taking what's already revealed and trying to put it into a form that is easily digestible by the hearer. And now a really good teacher will do in any field, will take material and they'll be able to look at a student in particular and say, how can I best make this material, not changing the material by the way, but how can I best make it digestible to the student? I don't have a syllabus that I go through and it's ironclad, written in stone. No, I see the student, I see their strengths, I see their weaknesses, I see where they're lacking, and I say, I'm going to take this content and I'm going to spoon feed it to them. Okay, that's the job of a teacher, that's the job of a preacher. Now, that's hard to do. That's right, it's much easier. Here's my syllabus, here's the things I say in lesson one, here's the thing I say in lesson two. It's very hard to do that. And oftentimes you fail doing that. But that is the optimal thing that a teacher, that a preacher can do. Not adding to, not take, if somebody's adding to or taking away, sirens should be going off, red flags. I'm just taking what has already been revealed and trying to make it digestible and useful. Useful applications, encouragement, showing you what I think it means. And, you know, one of the reasons I say that is you might say, as we get into this next point, that I have something against teachers. No, I am a Bible class teacher. I don't have anything against teachers or preachers. I'm a volunteer part-time preacher. I don't have anything against preachers. But what I'm going to say is that teachers and preachers are a good tool, but they're not necessary. In the sense that the ultimate source is the Bible. And if you look at just Robertson County, and somebody gets the wild hair to say, I want to know more about the Bible. How many buildings could they go into? They could go into the Catholic Church. They could go into the Presbyterian. They could go into the Baptist, one of the many Baptists. And you say, well, you know, the Bible's so complex. It's so hard to understand. And you're going to get this Presbyterian teacher, or you're going to get this Catholic teacher. And, well, too bad, you made the wrong choice, and now you're just stuck in that because you can't see what the actual truth is. You actually have no responsibility. It's impossible for you to see. Now, what you need is an unbroken chain of teachers all the way back to Jesus' time. If that chain ever breaks, it's impossible to fix because that's a necessity. That's a necessity because nobody can understand it without being taught by some other man. Absolutely false. Absolutely false. You do not need to be taught by some other man. We're taught by God. And in fact, the majority of teaching by man is false. Is false. Where does all false doctrine come by definition? By other men. By men. And, you know, who knows, 98, 99% of people who are religious have false doctrine. Now, I realize how arrogant that sounds. Everybody except me has false doctrine. I realize that sounds arrogant and small-minded and simple. I try, to the best of my ability, not to have any false doctrine. How do I do that? Being extremely skeptical of my own ability to understand. Always saying, is that really true? Now, I believe that, but is that really true? And how would I prove it's true? How would I go to the scriptures and prove it's true? Okay, that's the key. The scriptures. Now, if you don't believe in the scriptures, that's a whole other talk for another time. But we're going to assume you do believe in the scriptures. Coming to an end here, we're going to come to the meat. But we're not going to, it's just a bite. Fortunately, it's quite a simple point. Let's turn over to John chapter 1. John chapter 1.
I'll just start in verse 1. We'll read the first 9 verses.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through Him, and apart from Him, nothing came into being that has come into being. In Him was life. And the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. There came a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify about the light so that all might believe through him. You know, as I read that, I think that's really our, we don't have quite the calling of John the Baptist. He, of course, had a special calling, talked to directly by God. We're talked to indirectly by God. But what was his role? What did he say? My role is just to point to the true light. My role is to say, look over there. That's the true light. That's the Lamb of God. Behold, the Lamb of God, the true light. He was not the light, verse 8, but he came to testify about the light. That's what we're here to do, to testify about the light. There, verse 9, there was the true light. Now there is a true light. Look at the end of this verse. Coming into the world enlightens every man. And you say, that's hyperbole. Or, you know, that's a little bit of an overstatement. No, it's not an overstatement. He knows exactly what he's saying. He lightens every man. How do I know if something's true or not? Well, if the teacher I happen to end up with says it's true. If Matthew down at the Church of Christ there says it's true. No, that's a horrible way. That's not a good way. You should say, I'm going to take everything that Matthew says, and I'm going to scrutinize it, and I'm going to examine it, comparing it to what? The true light. Now, hopefully, I can take the true light and make it more accessible to you. Or hopefully, I can take the true light and encourage you to keep on doing what you already know. But guess what? I'm not the true light. There is a true light. What's coming into the world enlightens every man. That's not me. That's not John the Baptist. That's not Paul. That's not Peter. That's not any of the apostles. That is Jesus the Christ, the chosen one, the one sent by God to save the world. Let's turn over to John chapter 8 before we end here. John chapter 8, and then we'll be done. John chapter 8, let's start in verse 12. Then Jesus again spoke to them, saying, I'm the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Okay, that's really the only verse I want to read. Let's end on that. I'm the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in darkness. How did we start this sermon? What are the common questions that everyone has? What is the meaning of life? What is my purpose here? Can it even be determined? Who really knows? That sounds so arrogant to say that I know. Well, someone knows. And who is the one who decides? Who has the authority? Who gave you the authority to say such things? Then Jesus again spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. Do you want to know which path to follow? Do you want to know what is right and what is wrong? Do you want to know how you're going to be judged? Well, guess who can tell you? Not all those men at the Areopagus. They have some light, but they don't have this light. I can tell you that. I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in darkness. Does that sound enticing to you? You know, you're walking through this world with all these questions. So many people around you have questions. It seems like a milieu of darkness and decay. Would you like to be able to see where you're actually going and have confidence that it's the true path? Absolutely. He who follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Can we know what the purpose of life is? Absolutely. Why is that? Because the true light, which enlightens all men, which illuminates the path of every man, has shone in the world, coming to this world as flesh, to preach, to choose his disciples, to send out to the world so that the message can be known, so that we can know and have confidence through faith that, yes, that is the Son of God. Yes, that is the true light. If I follow him, I will not be disappointed. If I follow him, I will have what he promises I will have because I have faith in him. He is faith worthy. He is, I can, And, you know, saying that, there's so many fake gurus that say so many impressive things and have so many promises, but can you have faith in them? Are they faithful? And, you know, to varying degrees, no. Some of them are complete charlatans. Some of them may be just misguided. Some of them may be onto some things, but not have the full picture. But Jesus has the complete picture. He's the author of life, and he says, good news. You know, you may not be able to sit at the feet of Solomon. You might have to sit at the feet of Matthew, but don't let that bother you. The true light has been revealed. And you have that true light. No matter if you're blessed enough to sit next to David or to, you know, Dave down the street. It doesn't matter. The true light is who lights your path. And we, for that, are thankful. And the question then becomes, with that light revealed, how do you measure up? Are you following the paths of God? Are you doing what he says you ought to do? Are you living as you ought to live? When he says there's going to be a day, there's a day appointed where everyone will be judged by the man, Jesus Christ, does that fill you with joy or with fear? And if it fills you with fear, well, you have some work to do. You need to follow him, the true light, and you will have what he says you will have forever.